Oh, I'm gonna butcher that name.
Hey there, folks, over at CommanderCast.com and MTGCast.com. It's time for another episode of Rivals Duel. I, of course, am Eric Bonby. I'm sometimes sad, I can even be depressed, but I am never, ever blue. And with me today is Noel, a man who always looks both ways before crossing the battlefield. How are you doing, Noel?
Doing all right, Eric. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I missed you. You went to GP Minneapolis. You were gone. You left me all alone in this horrid little cave that we record Rivals Duel in.
Yeah, I was at GP Minneapolis last weekend. Today is the morning of May 14th. Last weekend I was over there. Had a lot of fun doing some judgy stuff. Shout outs to Alex who came up and said hi to me. I wish we would have had time to get a game in somewhere, but you were busy and I was really busy, and Sunday being Mother's Day didn't help at all. So thank you for Alex coming up and saying hi. Had a really great time. Learned a heck of a lot about judging and stuff like that, and looking forward to my next event that I get to go to.
Absolutely. I'm glad you had fun, man. That was the event that I was going to try and make it down to, and then it didn't end up working out, and so I'm kind of sad I missed it. But from what I hear, you had fun, and you are probably going to be doing more events soon, so that's good.
Yep.
So we got lots of a surprising amount of news. When we woke up this morning and we're just like, this episode's probably not going to have a lot of news, we were a little bit wrong, I think.
Yeah, and then we started talking a little bit about all that's happened in the last 2 weeks.
So let's start with, I think, since we were just talking about judging and all of the benefits therein, how about we talk about the new judge promos, which we are specifically mentioning because they are printing 3 of the commander-specific generals as promo, so this is going to be the only way that you can get these guys in foil.
Yeah, you know, they've announced what the judge foils are going to be basically for the next year. What they're doing is there's a lot of rumors of when these cards will roll out, so none of the judges have them in their hands yet. You know, but the ones for Commander are Riku, Aloro, Hannah Ship's Navigator, and Nekusar the Mindraiser, as well as some other ones that are obvious kind of EDH applicable cards, like there's a Greater Good, the Elish Norn, which is in the Phyrexian, when they did the Phyrexian, spoiler on her, so it's that one. And then an old school framed, Sword of Feast and Famine, which looks really good.
It looks cool. I don't like it quite as much as the, Fire and Ice and Light and Shadow, just because I don't think the new art lends itself as well to the old school frame. But, it's an old school frame Sword of Feast and Famine. You can get all 3 of, like, the super powerful swords in old school artifact frames now.
Yeah. And then the other one they put out is a Force of Will. And the Force of Will is not in the GP packet as of yet. What it is it's a, what they did is they sent it out to judges who had certified other judges because it was a celebration of the fact that there are now 5,000 active judges in the Magic community.
Nice.
Which is huge. So a bunch of us got Force of Wills. The Force of Wills are really pretty. I got mine in the mail a couple days ago.
They're pretty fancy looking, and it's a long overdue reprint of Force of Will, right?
Yeah, it's a very, you know, we've been talking about a judge promo Force of Will for a very long time.
And I'm glad with how they rolled it out. I'm glad they rolled it out as, like, a gift for judges who have been certifying other judges. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. A lot of neat stuff going on there. The big thing for Commander players is that you can now get Nekusar, Aloro, and Riku as a foil.
Mm-hmm. So people who play those decks are going to be very happy. Are you looking forward to playing against all the foily Nekusar decks?
Oh, just as much as I like playing against all the non-foil ones right now.
That's such a weird... It was so funny to me. I never would have guessed before the Commander product came out that was going to be the one general that got stuck in your craw.
Yeah.
But hindsight's 2020. That's kind of funny. I haven't seen a ton of Riku decks around recently, but Aloro is definitely seeing a lot of play, so I'm glad they have a foil of him. The art looks a little different on each of the ones, too. Like, they're trying to, like, emphasize what's going to be foiled. So Riku's shoulder pads seem to have, like, a bit of a different color to them. Aloro's got, like, cyan on him as opposed to steel, which is weird. And Nekusar looks the exact friggin' same. Yeah, no, the, I'm glad that they're doing it, and it gives me hope that they're gonna be printing, more of these in the future. Maybe a foil Prosh?
I understand. Huh? Huh? Well, you don't care about Prosh anymore.
I still care about Prosh, but I have taken apart my beloved Prosh deck. It could be temporarily. I just took it apart because I wanted, some more, I wanted to build a deck that had some more wiggle room in terms of slots, and I wanted to try something new because I haven't built a new deck in a while. Before I took the deck apart, just so you guys know, I got an email from Nick, a fan of the show, asking me to, send a copy of my Prosh list to him. I have been talking for a long time about how I was going to record a Prosh deck tech for CMDR decks over on YouTube, and I did it. It's done. I have recorded it. And I sent it into Uriah. I don't know when it will be posted or if it will be posted, but I'll let you guys know. If he decides not to post it for whatever reason, I will, I'll write up a deck tech at that time and I'll post it on the main site. But, for right now, I'm going to let him try and edit that together and put that up on YouTube, and then I'll direct you guys to him. So, hopefully that will be up sometime in the next couple weeks, and then I'll be able to just send a link on the site and mention it over here, and I'll email the people who have been asking for the list, and they can go check that out.
Yep.
Because I knew that if I didn't do that video before I took apart Prosh, I would get no end of flack. I wanted to build a different deck that does huge amounts of damage all at once, so I am trying out the new Xenagos, Xenagos the God, as my general in Gruul. I'm cutting out the black, so I'm going to lose some tutors, I'm going to lose some discard, and I'm going to lose a little bit of removal, and I'm going to try and fit in some different stuff. I get more anti-blue hate, which is awesome.
But, and completely unnecessary.
Not true! Not true! You always need more anti-blue hate. I just cut Mistcutter Hydra from the list, and it hurt me. It, like, physically hurt me to do it.
Okay, Eric.
But yeah, moving on from that, we have some new generals to talk about.
Yeah, let's hop in. The nice, we sometimes we get lucky and the spoiler comes out right when it needs to.
Exactly.
And so we're able to talk about stuff, because last night they released one of the new commanders from the Conspiracy set that's coming out in a few weeks.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about Brago, who's the one that was already spoiled. We're going to talk about the new one. And we're also going to weigh in on Dak Faden, because we haven't done that yet.
Well, sure, we haven't talked about Dak Faden yet either. Let's talk about Brago first, because that will cover my email that I got, too. I got Absolutely. An email from listener... Where is it? Mm. Nick is his name. It has
Different
Wally.
Nick then sent me the Prosh request.
Yeah. Says, hats off to Eric and yourself on a great podcast. So, listen, a question for you, since it involves blue. Not too sure if this is a question is an argument between the two of you, but I'd like your take. I prefer blue-white flicker to Bant or Rune. I've had a lot of fun with Lavinia the Tenth in my Blinker Flicker deck. I'm really excited about Brago. My question is, who makes the better U-white flicker Blink commander? And his opinion is Brago's better, but both deserve to be in the 99. Looking forward to my responses, yada, yada, yada. More and more back praising. stuff. What Brago says on it, just so for those of you who are listening along at home, Brago is, it's a blue, white, and two. Legendary creature spirit, flying, hits a 2/4, and when he deals damage to a player, exile any number of target non-land permanents you control, then return them to the battlefield under their owner's control. So basically blink any non-land you want.
Yep, specifically combat damage, so you have to be swinging with him.
Yep.
And he's always going to be blinking, if he gets through, he's blinking at least two things, right? Any number of things, regardless of how much damage he's doing. Ah, yeah, I misread that the first time.
Yeah, you
That's
can
okay.
blink the whole team. I'm really excited about this card.
That's powerful. Yeah, this is a powerful blink effect.
Yeah. Plus, it's a spirit. There's the Spirit Lord that gives you spirits hexproof that comes to mind.
Yep. There's definitely going to be a lot of ways in blue-white also to make sure he gets through for the damage. But in terms of him being better than Lavinia, this is a classic example of, do you want the effect that you want? Do you want the enabler, or do you... it's two pieces, it's two different halves of the same effect. Do you want the enabler that's going to allow you to blink stuff, or do you want the big effect that you want blinked as your general?
Yeah. You know, and looking at it, I think he's right. He says that that Brago's probably better, and I agree with a couple of big caveats. If your meta is very red heavy or very hyper aggressive, Lavinia may be better just because having perpetual access to stop that can matter a lot.
Absolutely. And if your deck just happens to skew more controlly and you don't want to be running a bunch of stuff to enhance evasion or make sure Brago gets through, then it might make more sense to have Lavinia as your general and Brago as a surprise in the 99.
Mm-hmm. That being said, I think in a vacuum, Brago is probably more powerful.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Blinks everything.
Yeah. I blink all of my dudes. In the worst case scenario, you're giving all your dudes pseudo-vigilance. Best case scenario, you're bouncing Cloud Goat Rangers and making armies of Kithkin.
This is going to be a... I think that when someone builds this deck well, it's going to be very, very hard to stand up to. Like a blinking Snapcaster, blinking Moldrifter, blinking Venser. Oh my god, my favorite teleporter. He's going to be bouncing all of the things. Yeah, no, this is a very, very, very cool blink card. And I'm glad that it triggers on combat, because I think that a lot of blue-white players aren't a huge fan of the combat step, so might avoid playing it based solely on that. Like, it's kind of a specialized card in blue-white for that reason.
Mm-hmm. It's a cool kind of build-around-me card. There's also another legend in this set. This one is Selvala Explorer Returned.
Man, is this a weird card.
Yeah, this is a weird card. Green, white, and one, a legendary creature elf scout, so not a completely irrelevant tribe. 2/4, and has this ability we've never seen before called Parlay. Mm-hmm. Parlay is tap. Each player reveals the top card of his or her library. For each non-land card revealed this way, add a green mana to your mana pool and gain a life. Then each player draws a card.
Yeah, no, this is a card designed for multiplayer, first of all. It clearly gets way more powerful the more people there are sitting at the table. It's also a draw engine for yourself and, admittedly, your opponents. It's a Howling Mine effect in green-white, which is odd.
Yeah, it's a way to keep the green flowing.
And it's a good way to get yourself mana and life. Like, obviously, as a group hug general, this is amazing. Let's just say that right now. If you wanted to build this as a group hug deck, and you want to avoid a lot of the anger people get when you play, like, Group Hug Blue or something like that, this card would be amazing for that, right? But as a outside of that, this card's really... It's not bad. It's just weird.
Yeah.
Like, that's a powerful effect, but, like, it's so kind of strange and out there. And I love strange and out there general, so I'm very excited by this card.
Mm-hmm. You know, I look at this and I go, you know, I run Baby Jace. On occasion, I even roll Baby Jace up. This is me baby jacing with upside for me.
Yeah.
So, and the color, you know, you can keep the cards flowing in green and white. I think this card is good. I want to try it out, and I have a Reese Tokens deck that wouldn't mind drawing more cards. That this is better than something like Howling Mine.
Absolutely, and that, like we were saying, that life gain and that mana you generate by tapping, it is not going to be irrelevant at all.
Yeah. I think this will be the, this will, probably instantly cause more furious activations of Sensei's Divining Top than you've ever seen.
Yeah, almost certainly. Everyone putting those lands on top to try and starve you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or, I need to draw an answer right now.
Yeah. This card, yeah, if you're at a four-player table and you're tapping this elf for four mana, you're going from that... If you assume that you didn't have haste, and that's the next turn, that's eight mana on your fourth turn. That's not a small amount of mana.
Yeah, it's an interesting card, and one definitely worth keeping your eyes on. I don't have a way, this is how this card's going to break in half, but...
Yeah, no, I'm very excited to see what this card does, which is really cool. I like that both of the conspiracy generals we've seen so far have been cards where it's like, I'm very, very excited to see how they perform and how they do, and I'm very excited that they're both very unique effects.
Yeah, these are very different... very cool stuff happening.
And stuff that we haven't really had before. We haven't had a blink on the scale of Brago, and we haven't had, like, anything like Selvala, really.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm, And I know that now that we've seen two of them, we can tell that there's going to be a cycle of allied color legends. I'm very excited to see particularly the Rakdos and the Gruul ones. I really want to see what those are like.
Mm-hmm. So we have that going on. We also have another Planeswalker. Let's try to knock him out real quick here.
I was really excited for this guy to finally be printed as a Planeswalker. I just want to say, because story-wise, he's really cool. He's like a thief from across the multiverse. He just goes around stealing everything. So, Dak Faden, 3 and an is it. So I'm never going to play him, but I'm still excited that he got printed. he starts with 3 loyalty, so kind of a Liliana of the Veil kind of situation. His plus one is target player draws 2 cards and discards 2 cards. Plus one for Faithless Looting. That's really cool. I always play Faithless Looting in my red decks. I think it's a very powerful card. So I'm glad that that's an ability on there. Minus 2, gain control of target artifact. Just unconditionally, like, this guy on his own could just be 3 mana, play him, gain control of an artifact permanently. When Dak Faden is gone, you get to keep that artifact. And that's kind of enough to play him on its own, I think, because that's really powerful. You can come down and take someone's sword, or you can take someone's soul ring, and that's quite good for 3 mana. And
not to mention going, surprise, I need to use your worm coil engine.
Yeah, that Steel Hellkite is going to be really helpful for me, thanks. And then his ultimate, which minus 6, you're probably never going to get. Oh, well, I suppose you could get to it. Is you get an emblem with whenever you cast a spell that targets one or more permanents, gain control of those permanents. Oh, that's evil. That's so, like, specialized and cool, and I love Planeswalker ultimates like that. Because it seems powerful enough that you could easily win the game off of it, but it's also kind of weird. You have to have a bunch of stuff that targets, but that's a neat ultimate, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely neat. I don't know, I feel like I'm going to use this a lot. I feel like I'm torn on this card a lot, because I feel like the negative 2 is the big ability that I'd want out of this.
Oh yeah, absolutely, without a doubt.
Like, to me, I don't feel good about paying 3 mana for a Faithless Looting, and the ultimate's a little too weird for me.
I think what's gonna happen with this card is that it's gonna move in cycles of, it comes down, you take an artifact, then you spend 2 turns, Faithless Looting, and that's really good. Free Faithless Looting 2 turns in a row is awesome. So that's gonna be a lot of hand sculpting, and then on the 3rd turn, you're gonna steal another artifact. And then as long as he's on the battlefield, that's what his effects are gonna be. Mm-hmm. Until someone manages to kill him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not entirely sold on this one yet, but I also wouldn't be surprised if it's good.
I'm sold on it for the mana cost. I think that for the investment of mana and for the kind of turns this thing can come down, that's really good. And that's especially, like, early game soul rings. Turn 3 is still early enough to interrupt something like that. So if your opponent drops a soul ring or a mana crypt early in the game and your answer to it is to take it, that's gonna really hurt them in all of their sensitive bits. All right. Is that it for the news today? We talked about me taking apart Prosh. We've talked about the new... we talked about you going to Minneapolis. We talked about the new generals and the new judge program stuff. I think that's kind of it.
Yeah. Let's hop into an argument.
Our argument.
Bum, bum, bum.
Absolutely. I'm excited about this one. It's a fan-submitted argument, one that I have to have with people in Ottawa because I don't engage them, but have to listen to from people in Ottawa all the time. So it's the argument of whether tournaments are good or bad for a EDH community. And do you want to read off the email, Noel? Or
I'm going to butcher your name, and I apologize in advance. I believe it's Kanoa. Tell me in the comments if I got that wrong, but Kanoa has sent us email. There's a 2 sentences worth of front loading that says she loves us, which I'll not read on the air, but it says, anyway, I have a semi-contentious issue that I would love to hear discussed on the show. Whether tournaments are a good thing for EDH. I know you guys sort of touched on this a bit with your Battle Cruiser versus Fighter Jet episode, but I'd like to hear your specific thoughts on how you guys think tournaments can affect the EDH scene, or whether they're good or bad for the format. And then, they go on to give us our give us her opinions, but she'd love to hear us hash this one out on the podcast. And I like it too.
Okay. Yeah, no, thank you very much for the email. So I think that this is one of the arguments where it's, the devil's gonna be in the details, because Noel and I are both kind of pro-tournament, but I'm just pro-tournament. I think that, more EDH is rarely gonna be a bad thing for a community. I think, I love EDH and I love more of the things that I love, so I'm okay with it. And Noel is, I like tournaments, asterisk, asterisk, asterisk.
Yeah. Big word, but there. So, to touch on, I think, first of all, we gotta be a little bit more specific on EDH tournaments, cause there's a lot of, I've seen kind of three different ways they happen at different events. The first one is kind of just, they'll run these at, like, four-man pickup games at GPs, where it's you and your guy, there's some kind of prizes, but it's just a single one-shot deal, where you're playing one game for whatever the prize is on it. There's league systems, or points where, you know, you have your, you lose a point if you cast Soul Ring turn one, or, you know, for being able to do over 1,000 damage in a single turn, you get a point, or stuff like that, where they've got some kind of point system that helps impact what you do. And then there are ones that are larger tournaments. They're tend to be multi-round, and they're based on either standings or something else. And I think those three things are all different, and I think there are pitfalls to all of them.
Okay.
Let's start with talking about just, like, four-man pickup games. This is something that, actually, I witnessed at GP Minneapolis, and I'm always real leery. I always tell my friends, you know, maybe you should think before you hop into the Commander four-man pods, because a lot of times they're just miserable. Because the old way you'd see them would be, it was $5 to play, and then the person who won got $20 in vendor credit. The problem with that one is that you basically have a money machine, where you bring your most degenerate, powerful deck. You don't play Commander. You play what looks like Commander and follows all the Commander rules, but it's actually one player trying to see if they can go off right away on turn two. Most of the times, the games would last less than 10 minutes, and one person walks away with $20.
Yeah, because that is structured in a way that is specifically... It's almost like poker, like a winner takes all, we all throw money in the pot, and whoever walks away gets it. So I can see why that would definitely encourage cutthroat gameplay. And if someone parked themselves at the Commander tables all day, they could make a very healthy profit.
Yeah, I know somebody who bought a Judge promo Mana Crypt with this under the old system.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be pretty good. Okay.
Yeah. Nah, it's not good at all. Bad for the
format. No, I mean, bad for the format, good for that dude.
So there is a way to do this. And I watched these, shout outs to Legion Events and the guys who ran GP Minneapolis, because they've got this one figured out. This was how the four-man Commander games worked there. Is for the Commander games, you sat down and the judge who was running your event handed everybody two packs. And what it was is one of the packs went to the person who knocked you out of the tournament. So whoever, if you were the last man standing, you got to keep it. Anytime else, when you eliminated a player, you got their pack. Then the other one was the good guy pack. And the good guy pack, you had to give to another player, but you could give to whoever you wanted.
Yeah, and I think just, first of all, making it packs to start is awesome. The good guy player thing, this sounds like a system that would be easy to game as well with, like, Collusion. You just go in with your friend and hand him the pack. But the problem with that is that the profit is not great enough to kind of warrant it, right? It's not the same as you're getting pure vendor credit money that you can then turn into cards that you can then use or sell. So having it be a pack system is a huge benefit just to start.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Yes, you could collude this. Me and my buddy could go in, and a lot of times I had players with us who didn't make day two who played Commander pods all the second day would end up in the same pod, but they weren't actively colluding, but they knew each other. And then, even then, you know, even if you collude, even if you say, you know, you and I are going to hand each other our packs, you're up, what, two packs? Plus, everyone's going to know you're doing that really pretty quickly, and they're going to fix it. So you're going to get two or three packs tops doing that.
Exactly. The good guy pack idea, that's kind of cool. You give it to someone who either did the most impressive thing or was the nicest guy or whatever.
And it was any criteria you wanted. Our joke was, you know, it's the person who beat, it can be the person who beat you, the person who saved you, the person whose hair you like the most, whatever your definition of it was.
It's also a, that's also, kind of in four-player commander games, you could totally use that booster pack as a political tool. It's like, I know it's probably not in your best interest to save me or save my creatures right now, but if you stop my, this guy from sweeping my board,
I do have this pack of magic cards. And I never saw that so much, but it would probably be something that I don't necessarily would be frowned upon. Like, it's something that would work.
I think that's something that works beautifully. Like, in terms of, like, the one-time bribe for diplomatic decisions in Commander, I think that's great. it would be different if they were sitting on, like, a stack of packs and they were, like, constantly doing it. But if you have the, like, the one-time break in case of emergency, someone want this, that's awesome.
Give pack to not die.
Exactly.
So those are great. And it was funny because I asked my friends who went on them day two. Like, they played Commander Pods most of the day. It's like, were these fun? And they're like, yeah, they were a blast. No one was bringing their mean, evil, worst things you can do in Commander decks. And just, everyone was going and having a good time.
Yep. Well, I'm glad to hear that. There's another type of tournament you wanted to talk about, right?
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about leagues real quick.
Okay.
And, like, point systems or stuff like this. This is a real common thing for stores to run, because they want to run a commander event, but don't want the, I guess, I don't want to say hurt feelings, but the social contract violating logistics of running an actual commander tournament.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to be either free-for-all games, or you got X amount of things, but you have a league system, and you'll have some kind of points. You know, this is real common. You know, Sheldon Mannery talks with this with his league at Armada Games. You'll hear about these before, and you've got different things that either give you plus or minus points. Some of them will have a minus point for eliminating a player before the fourth turn, or casting Sol Ring on turn one.
Okay.
Or they have plus points for things like, I was able to deal over 1,000 damage in a single turn, or I saved another player and kept them alive. Different things like that.
Okay. I'm going to say right now, I hate these things. I hate them so much. Like, I really dislike those league systems. But continue.
And the idea is that you, by incentivizing certain behaviors, you're able to get players to play socially contract acceptable games of Commander. And they can be very sculpted very locally. You can kind of take what the locals like to play and incentivize those behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to just a come free for all and whoever wins wins.
Okay. And now, you really like these, right?
I'm a fan of them because you can get locally what you want. I've never played in one. They're not something that I particularly like just because of the logistics of running them.
Gotcha.
And they kind of inadvertently define what having fun is supposed to look like in a game.
Exactly.
But, I can see people if there are people who enjoy them, and, you know, it'd be different if I'd sat down with, you know, my 8 local players and said, here's how we're going to do this and come up with our own list of stuff. I just have never, we've never taken the time to do that.
Yeah. My problem with, I've got a couple problems with those leagues. The first of all is that they aren't new player friendly. If for someone to just come in off of the street, hear about the EDH tournaments coming off of the street, with any old EDH deck, and then they have to sit there and look at the rules, and then they're just like, oh, well, my deck can't do half of the things on this list, so now I'm operating at a huge disadvantage. Or it's like, if I'm just getting into EDH and I'm trying to learn EDH while I'm playing, and you also have to keep track of all these potential, like, plus-minus point things in addition to learning how to play EDH.
Mm-hmm.
And then my biggest problem is that it's telling me how to play the game. And I don't like that at all. If you want to me, the entire point of the good thing about tournaments is that they encourage more play. And it's like, here, you can play this more often and you can play, it's a way for you to play more often. It's a way to get more people to play against in the same place. But I don't want to walk in and have someone tell me how to play. That would be, to me, that's almost the same as being like, you walk into a chess tournament and they're just like, okay, but just know that you're not allowed to move your knights until you've moved all your pawns first. And it's like, what? But that's not what I wanted to do. So that's why they kind of get stuck in my craw. I don't like them. However, as this is the debate of asterisks, I will say that as a one-time, like, fun thing, if they aren't the regular way you run the events and you want to break them out, like, once a month to break up the monotony of, like, weekly EDH tournaments, I think that's a brilliant idea. I think having special EDH tournaments in terms of, like, playing with the system a bit and getting people to play different variants of Commander is awesome. So I like leagues for that. And I like that especially because if you're doing them like once a month, you can change the rules month to month. And if you post them in advance, people will be like playing decks to try and, or building decks to try and, exploit those rules or try and get the points out of those rules. So you're going to end up with people you're not just encouraging more commander play, but you're encouraging more and creative commander deck building. And I like that.
Mm-hmm.
But like as the standard weekly tournament, I freaking hate them.
Fair enough. Then we get into the big mama of them all, the actual commander tournament. You can't see my air quotes, but you can sure hear them.
Those air quotes, they're slapping my ears.
Yeah. These tend to be multi-round events where you play against different opponents each round or some combination of different opponents each round and then pays out with some kind of prize schedule. I tend to not like these for a few reasons. First of all, you'll see a lot of times these are really ripe for collusion. And then if I come in with four friends and we decide we're going to take down this tournament, you know, I'm in the pod with you. I cast Factor Fiction. You give me a 5-0 split. I cast Time Stretch, targeting you to give you two additional turns to combo out and beat the table and give me second place.
Yeah, that's kind of bullshit.
The other thing with them is that, again, it encourages bad behavior. My go-to example of this was at GP Denver a few years ago. I was the head judge for the Commander Challenge, which the final payout for it was a complete set of Return to Ravnica.
Mm-hmm.
When that was the newest set in Standard. So it was about, I don't remember how much it cost. We figured out it cost around $300 or $400 at the time to win this Commander event. And so it encouraged people to bring, you know, 5-color Hermit Druid, or yes, this says Captain Sisse on it, but secretly it's a Raphelos deck. Or Ad Nauseam Tendrils, or Zombie. Like,
I have seen Ad Nauseam Tendrils at one of those things where the prize was a Judge Foil Xiaodun at the time when Xiaodun was worth a ton. And so I can definitely sympathize with that. This is another case where, to me, whether this is good or not is all about the scheduling. Because when the situation you're describing where it's a once in a while, like, special event thing, I completely agree that it encourages people to come out to play to win and not to play for fun, and that people are going to try and build the most broken decks, and they are going to not care even slightly about their opponents. And so you don't get what Commander is about when you go, because Commander is supposed to be about fun. It's supposed to be the fun format. So you don't get what you're looking for from Commander when you go to one of those tournaments, I think. Especially considering that people are going to be coming with vastly different power levels in decks, right? There are going to be the people who are coming in with just their deck trying to play, and then there's going to be the guys who come in with their super tuned, EDH death machine. But we have regular one-on-one tournaments, at a store in Ottawa, comic book shop on Bank Street. And they have the fact that they're regular, and you're playing for store credit. So it's another, this is a money-making thing. You only have one tournament a week, so it's not like you can make a tremendous amount of money. But it is a money-making thing, and they pay out based on the attendance, and the attendance tends to be in somewhere in the teens to 20s. And the winner gets quite a bit of money in store credit, but because it's regular and because it's every week, people kind of know what to expect. And the people who build decks more for fun, like say me, and the people who build, decks that are like cutthroat and designed to win immediately reach an equilibrium. because it's one of those things where a cutthroat deck is a cutthroat deck is usually really, really easy to build specifically against, or like to build hate for. And because of that, we've got this amazing meta where like everyone, even the people who come in with the intention, I'm playing to win, I'm playing to get this money, don't win the tournaments consistently every week. They can place, they usually make like top eight or something like that, but they can get blown out by decks that came out of nowhere because they were designed for, or they weren't, like, or their decks weren't, meted for that, or, they get blown out by decks that have hate for them, and it's, and people go in with their, like, fun decks that they're making because they enjoy doing that, like my Prosh deck that I enjoy playing because it deals a bunch of damage, or, I've got a buddy who plays, black-white, and he just plays it because he loves black-white, and he loves control-y stuff, and he loves doing, not necessarily combos, but, synergies, and that's what he loves to do, and he's made decks that compete in these tournaments, and, like, deal with decks, that are designed to be just, like, killer decks all the time. Azusa, and, Xur, and Maelstrom Wander, and he goes up against them, and he can win, and that's awesome.
Mm-hmm. And that's just, and I think there's some different ways to do it. I think if you're doing a big one-shot event like this, incentivizing good behavior is important.
Yeah.
I've seen where the equivalency of the good guy pack turns into good guy points. Like, I've seen ones where the way I would run, if you were trying to run a large-scale commander tournament, you would still incentivize winning. Like, you'd have it be, say, 3-2-1-0 for points you score for where you ended up in the match.
Absolutely.
And then give each player a point, maybe, to give to an opponent. And then make sure your seedings are done at random and are predetermined so that there's no collusion.
Yeah, my favorite thing to do at one of those, or how I would run one of those tournaments, is that I would have, there was this, for a while, the guy who used to run the EDH tournaments in Ottawa, he doesn't do them anymore. He had this thing where it was an end of the year invitational for huge prizes, like huge non-magic related prizes. And like, at the last one, at the one and only one that he did before he stopped running the tournaments, one of the prizes was a samurai sword. Another prize was a like handcrafted hard marble chess set, like crazy stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, but the thing about the Invitational that I thought was really cool was that how you got into the Invitational was based upon certain things. One of them was based on the most points. One of them was based on the most points in the multiplayer variation of our tournaments. One of them was, but then there was stuff like, most attendance, most decks played. So like the most different generals played in the, tournaments, best sportsmanship was one of them. And so if I was to run a huge EDH tournament with like a big prize, I would make sure that there was a big prize and the winners were playing for the big prize, but I would have prizes that were, I'd say, almost as good or like arguably as good depending on who you were. And I would have them based upon stuff like best sportsmanship, most creative kill and stuff like that. And I'd hand those out at the end of the tournament as well.
Miss Congeniality prizes.
Stuff like that, yeah. But, like, it just, like, stuff for, like, the most creative kill is one that I think would be really cool. Just stuff that doesn't necessarily slide in with the same kind of strategies that you're just going to overlap when you're trying to, like, go for broke and win that main prize. Like, I wouldn't have one for most players eliminated at once. Best player save. I would probably do that. Maybe have a reward, like the total lottery jackpot one would be best top deck.
Ah.
I don't know, that's just my idea for how I'd run it.
Mm-hmm. And I think there are ways to do that that can be okay. I think it's going to be a learning experience, and I think you need a group of players who are willing to let you fail a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, huh, that didn't work, so same time next month and we'll do this better?
Yeah. And I think that's fine. EDH players tend to be Well, we just want any excuse to play EDH. I was gonna say that we tend to be more forgiving than other Magic players. That's not true. That's not true at all. We have less opportunities for, like, structured play where there's lots of new people playing lots of new decks. So we'll do anything to get more of those tournaments.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, a few kind of overarching themes of this for Commander event tournament things. Incentivize good behavior in some way, whether it's, like miscongeniality prize categories, whether or not they're the good guy packs or stuff like that. Do something like that.
I think those are two very elegant solutions to incentivizing, good behavior that I think I vastly prefer to EDH leagues.
Yeah. Or do an EDH league something where it's a local thing where it's fun. The trick is to make sure that your tournaments incentivize the kind of behavior you want at an EDH table.
Yep.
Other big overarching things, and this is something that's going to sound dumb, but keep your eye on the prize payout. If you're paying out $500,000 prizes for a EDH tournament, you might want to rethink your options.
You might also want to rethink how much money you're investing into Magic tournaments.
Well, if we have, let's say we have a big tournament, say 36 people at $5 a head.
Oh, I heard you say $500,000.
Oh, no, if you're giving away, if you're doing that, tell me where it is, I will come and play Commander.
Yeah,
but absolutely. I will be bringing ad nauseum if you pay the prize of $500,000.
Definitely, that's another thing, watch your payout is a huge thing, because the higher the prize is, the more likely people are to come out and try and do something snaky for them. Like, I know there was people who were talking about starting to run tournaments in Ottawa who were talking about having dual lands as the prizes. And I was like, that's going to be the nastiest meta you could possibly get. Having people fighting for dual lands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's see. Other things for them. Keep them fun. The other thing to do is make sure that everyone knows the rules well before you get there. If you're going to do a league system, if you're going to do some kind of good guy system, make sure that how the points are going to be out goes out a week or two in advance so people can plan. If we're going to incentivize, say we're doing a league system and having more than 250 creatures on the board is a thing without going infinite, I don't know. I want to be able to build a deck that can go for that kind of thing. Or, if we're doing good guy stuff, maybe I don't play your tiers sustain me, Oros, the Avenger deck.
Yeah, if you're incentivizing massive amounts of damage, maybe you aren't going to be playing, a control deck. And if you're punishing people for dealing huge amounts of damage to a single player in a single turn, then maybe my Xenagos deck isn't gonna belong there.
Yeah. Or knocking out multiple players in a single turn makes combos bad.
Yeah, exactly.
So those are kind of my big overarching things for tournaments. I think they can be good. I think the problem is that if you run them just like you'd run, say, a standard tournament, which is what a lot of TOs try to do, is they go, I know how to run a Magic tournament, we'll run them this way. And those are the kind of things that incentivize behavior you don't want in a Commander tournament and make for bad games.
Yeah. I think I'm always going to say that I think more Commander's a good thing until we reach that breaking point where it's like people are playing too much Commander and it's completely lost its luster. But seeing as how we're a niche within a niche, I don't think we're ever going to reach that saturation point.
Yeah.
But I think that there are a couple pitfalls to trying to run a Commander tournament, absolutely. But I completely disagree with anyone who says that Commander tournaments are bad for a meta. I think more people playing the game more often and being exposed to different people is a big thing. That's the biggest benefit to me of a Commander tournament, is that you get to play against people from outside your play group and get exposed to different play styles and see how their decks have evolved because of their play group and stuff like that. So, like, if I was to go somewhere that isn't blue heavy, seeing how my deck interacts when that Spellbreaker Behemoth and that Vexing Shusher come down, because I'm used to playing against a bunch of counterspell decks. So I like the mixing of different metas, and I think tournaments are a good way to facilitate that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I feel like we've kind of put a bow on this one already.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think we both ended pro tournament, but plan ahead and know what you're doing.
Yeah. Some big asterisks for TOs and other people who are looking at running one of these type of events. Hopefully this was useful. I'm hoping that we answered your question. I'm gonna screw up the name again. Kanoa, I think. Tell me how to pronounce that in the comments, please.
Phonetic spelling.
Yeah. But that was, I think we kind of put a bow on this topic, so I think we can pretty much wrap it up for the day.
Yeah, I think it's time to move to the outro. As always, I'm Eric Bonvy. You can reach me at ericbonvy@gmail.com. It's Eric with a C. I'm also that Bonvy guy on Twitter. That Bonvie guy. You can get a hold of me at commandercast.com, where I check the comments for Rivals Duel. I also check the comments on my article series, Commander with the Comedian, that is posting up the next Commander with the Comedian, or if you go check out the article that went up the previous week to this Rivals Duel, you're gonna see my humorous take on a Commander game I had with a new player and his Erebos deck, and another new player playing my Norn the Wary deck, and that's worth checking out because that game was hilarious.
Yep, and if you want to get a hold of me, my email is NoelClausen, NoelClausen. @gmail.com. I'm also on Twitter at @mtgnoel. I check the comments on the articles. I also check the comments on MTGcast. Make sure to hit like us on Facebook. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/rivalsduel. Our RSS feed, for those of you who have an RSS feeder that you want to link us into, is feeds.feedburner.com/rivalsduel. And I believe that's all the contact information we got to give out.
I believe that's it. I believe we are done plugging everything.
Yep.
Until next time, folks. I'll see you later.
Yep, see you later. Thanks for listening, guys.